I'd like to call the Board of Supervisors organizational meeting for January 4th, 2023 to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So, Happy New Year, Board members. Like I said, just kind of give you a quick rundown here for the 2023 organizational meeting. We'll start off with the election of the chair. And at that point, when the chair is elected, I'll hand over the gavel and all the books and goodies for whoever the chair is. Then we'll proceed with the election of vice chair, adoption of a resolution entitled Organizational Meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors 2023, adoption of the 2023 regular meeting calendar, and then finally adoption of board bylaws and rules of practice and procedures. So I guess we'll start off with the first order of business, which is the election of the chairman for 2023. Would someone like to make a nomination?
Does anybody want to talk about before nomination? Who wants it and doesn't know that, so we...
I was going to make one suggestion. 4 years ago, I got a phone call. It's probably the only time. Well, I'll take it back. I had one phone call one other time. It was made by a person that I'm very fond of. And he said, you know what? If this is going to be Miss Booker's last year, she might want to be the chair.
I agree.
And that was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Weaver. And I thought that was a really good idea. So in case this is the last rodeo, Ms. Booker, that's my take on it. Would you like to be the chair?
That would be my honor.
Second.
I haven't made a motion. I was just asking Ms. Booker. I was just asking.
And not to get in the way of that, but then there's two people that
might not be.
So
right, and Mrs.
Eager's and that's why I just asked. Right.
And Mrs. Eager's never had the honor of being the chair either. So whereas Mrs. Booker has.
I guess I came out the wrong way with the way I said it.
No, I hear you.
But yeah, he called me up a couple nights beforehand, and Ms. Booker said, I want to continue running, and just in case this is the last rodeo. And so,
again, that's why I wanted to open up the conversation instead of any motions to.
Yeah, that's why I didn't make a motion. That's why my first thing was a question to Ms. Booker, if she would be interested.
I wholeheartedly agree and thought the same thing. And I think it's very gracious of you to make that nomination.
Like yourself. I said, I served at the will of the board with what I did. And if you asked me to do it again, I'd do it again. But like I said, I've made no bones about it how much I thought about Mr. Weaver.
Yeah.
And he made that conversation. He literally called me up and said, hey,
When did he call?
4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
4 years ago. This Booker's smiling. But he said, Mike, I know I've nominated you the last 2 years, but if this is Moselle's last one, I think I'm going to nominate Moselle. I said, Mr. Weaver, if you do, I'll second it right back. So, Mr. Weaver, I hope you're listening.
I can tell you he's not listening online.
But Ms. Eager, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to disrespect you when I said that, Ms. Eager. I just thought about that when you said that, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And please don't take it that way, man. I didn't think you did, because I'd asked you before.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like she agrees. Both of you said it. And so I'll make a motion that we make Moselle the chair of the Board of Supervisors for the coming year.
I'd like to second it. Well, go ahead, Ms. Eager. You go ahead.
I'll do it.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so we got a motion by Mr. Fairchild for Mrs. Booker as the board chair, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And motion passes 4-0.
Mike, I think you can stay there. I don't think the chair is specifically placed.
Ms. Booker, I'm sorry, did you vote or did you?
Are you abstaining or are you voting?
I have to abstain.
She abstained.
4-0-1.
4-0-1.
Yeah. Okay, well.
All right, so I guess we need to do a switcheroo then because technically the board chair sits here next to Mr. Payne.
I think we just did the shuffle when we were trying to.
We can leave it right where it is if you want.
That's fine.
I'm fine. Okay. So y'all can leave me over here. Make me have to smack this thing.
All right. There you go. In the gavel.
All right.
Now what are you going to do, Mosa?
Huh? I don't think there are any other words to say other than I'm very honored and I thank you and I'll be here for you to do my very best. Okay?
Amen.
All right, now we will open the nomination for Vice Chair of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors for the calendar year 2023.
In the same vein as Mr. Sheridan's kind and generous motion, I would like to nominate Mrs. Eager.
I'll second that one.
All right. It has been motioned that Mrs. Patricia Eager will be the vice chair, seconded by you, Chris, both of y'all. And Mike,
it don't matter.
Mike Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The chair votes aye.
We didn't even give her a choice in it.
Ladies are going to be in charge no matter whether the title is there or not.
Two women, look out, y'all.
There you go.
We're going to have to meet next week to get our strategy.
And Madam Chair, did Mrs. Eager abstain as well?
Sure.
4-0.
Right. That's good. All right. Next thing we have is adoption of the resolution entitled Organizational Meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors 2023.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, so again, this is kind of is a resolution stating for 2023 where our meeting places, our meeting times. So again, our meeting place we have listed here is the Carisbrook Performing Arts Center. Meeting times, day meetings begin at 5 and end at 9 unless extended. Night meetings begin at 7 and end at 11 unless extended. And when scheduled, work sessions begin at 5 p.m. prior to the regular meeting. And the resolution was in the board package, kind of stating the same. So be happy to answer any questions the board has about the resolution.
I'll just make one statement. Just sitting back and looking at this over the last few years. I know we have it on there for 4 hours. When we go past that 4 hours, I just don't know how productive we are. When we get here 5-6 hours, 5.5 hours, I got ADHD anyway. They just didn't have that label when I was a kid. But I just think if we stick to those 4 hours and best we can, which we do try to do sometimes, but when we get long, I think we start losing focus.
But what would you do if you're not finished with the agenda?
We'd move to the next 2 weeks, 2 weeks later.
Well, don't you think that might sort of hold
things
up?
Okay. I think that we as a group just, and this is just me sitting back, I think we get long. I know I've never tried to cut anybody off or tried not to, okay? And that probably got longer.
Well, the problem is that there are cases where you really need to get it done.
Well, that's why I said try. I didn't say mandatory.
Well, I think that's what the bylaws really say. You got to have an affirmative vote to extend it.
Right.
And just everybody has been agreeable, and nobody has tried to interfere with it. I do remember some cases in past years, not recently, but in past years, there were cases where more and more supervisors would say, I'm going home. And the meeting was not accepted. But that's a matter of personal discipline. That's probably about as good a system as you're going to get.
Like I said, I'm not trying to say anything against it. I just wanted to make
I hear you. I think as a chairperson, I should try to make it through in 4 hours.
If you want.
Mrs. Eager, as my assistant, can kind of keep me focused to say the discussion, we need to end the discussion, come up with some kind of ending resolution, and move on. So we can try that.
Well, there are ways that you can shorten the meeting.
Yeah.
One of them is to use the more conventional form of for actions, and that is there is no discussion on motion after it's seconded until after it's seconded.
Okay.
And so if you're talking about rezoning Blackacre, discussion of whether it's appropriate to rezone Blackacre is out of order until a motion is made and seconded.
Okay.
Now, that's a very strict rule in my few decades of sitting here. I have repeatedly suggested that you should consider that, and the board has never done it.
Okay.
But I'm just bringing it up.
I've written it down, and I need to hold to that. So discussion starts after the second. I was reading.
So I think we have to vote on that, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Okay.
Does that become our policy?
You don't technically need to vote on it because
it's already
matter.
That's a rule as it stands.
But you need to, again, that's a matter of self-discipline.
Yes, we have to enforce.
Like I said, I tried my best not to.
It would be more along the lines of for each agenda item, if the chairperson feels that it's run along to kind of move it along more and then kind of cut it.
Yeah.
And then if it wasn't positively, then it would go back to the motion, correct?
So
if after the second, and then we discussed it, and then the vote came up, we didn't pass
it. If it didn't pass.
It would go back to another motion.
Yes,
Secondly, I think the proper way to do that would be to go through a motion that passes or fails, and if there's a substitute motion, that can be made at any time. So, Mr. Fairchild makes a motion and seconded, and a majority of the board doesn't agree with it, doesn't want to pass it. Mr. O'Brien could come up and say, I want to make a substitute motion. And of course, then that has to be voted on. If it is, then the substitute motion takes its place, and you have to vote on the substitute motion. But that's another way to do it. It's more formal and more impersonal. I've always kind of liked the way the board does business because I feel like talking to people. But it does tend to let things get a little
more. Now, you are also considered the parliamentarian.
Yes.
So you could remind me or whoever that we need to follow that rule.
If the board wants me to do it, I'll be glad to do it.
Yeah, so we can kind of stay. I don't mind staying on track. Any questions?
I just say, as much as I completely understand your point, at the same time, we all have points that we want to get out that we feel haven't been heard, or really, even there's been discussion, maybe the discussion hasn't gotten to the point of where we're trying to go with it. And, if it's productive to get something out and dealt with, then I don't want us, personally, sitting here being time conscious. Personally, and there's times where I've had to be on a early morning plane out of Richmond, but if it's getting it done, I'm going to ride it out. And so completely hearing what you were saying, Mike, at the same time, we meet twice a month, and some items are beefy and need conversation. And so I also don't want us to be afraid of doing that, of discussion, and certainly don't want to be in a situation where one of us feels like, boy, this hasn't really been vetted, and suddenly you're saying to the chair, I'm sorry, but I've got to say what I've got to say, and then suddenly your board vote to say we're going to leave.
Yeah, I understand. I understand it exactly where you're coming from. And I do think, as chair, I would try to move that along so everyone does feel comfortable that you're being heard. But sometimes we repeat what the other person said, and we just say it in a different way. So we need to be conscientious that we're adding something to the conversation and not just
repeating.
Yeah, all good points.
And I'm not saying try to speed through
anything. No.
And I'm saying, but I think when we get to a certain time, point in time, I think we become counterproductive. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If there's no more discussion about that, let's go to D.
No, you got to make a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, hey, I got this.
All right,
I haven't been able to do this
you.
For a while.
I see
it. I move to adopt the resolution entitled Organizational Meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors 2023, which designates the location, day, and time of meetings. Meeting place, Carey's Brook Performing Arts Center. Meeting times, day meetings begin at 5 p.m. and end at 9 p.m. unless extended. Night meetings begin at 7 p.m. and end at 11 p.m. unless extended. When scheduled, work sessions begin at 5 p.m. prior to the regular evening meeting. I do have to add one thing. Do we have the 2 months where we're meeting at the library? Didn't we say we're going to have 2 months where we leave here?
Yes, but this is more for like what is our typical.
I didn't
typical,
know if we had to add
no,
something.
This is more of our typical meeting place.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mike Sharon and second by Patricia. Are you all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The chair votes aye, so that motion is carried. Now we have a calendar. We had a calendar presented to us. Here it is. Did anyone see anything on there? Is that would the library thing come up on this?
Really the library thing is just something that we do in October just because we're in this spot. And so we don't necessarily need to post that. I mean, again, from a posting standpoint, we do all the necessary notifications well in advance for the public. But this here just lists all the dates throughout 2023 and the times for those. And then obviously, as usual, we have one July meeting, and that's at July 5th this year.
Okay. All right. Any questions or concerns about it? If not, do we have a motion?
I move to adopt the 2023 Board of Supervisors regular meeting calendar as presented.
Second, please.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. That motion is passed. And the next thing we have is E, adoption of board bylaws and rules of practice and procedures.
So, Madam Chair, again, typical bylaws and rules of procedure, a couple things. One, Mrs. Booker noted that there was a 4 p.m. error in what was in the package. We've made a correction on that. And then just one point of just clarification, too. If you go at the very end of the bylaws, maybe if I move this and I just pull it all the way down, that'll probably be quicker. So at the end, when we adopted our bylaws last year, we adopted them separately. This time they're including, regarding electronic meetings, they're included within the bylaws themselves. So again, there's no changes that have been in there with the exception of just adding that piece in there, which would have been in there last year, but it was adopted separately. Happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Do we have any questions about the bylaws and rules? Okay, if not, we need a motion.
I move to readopt the current Board of Supervisors bylaws and rules of practice and procedures.
Okay, we have a second.
Second.
All right, we have the motion by Mrs. Eager and second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. And now for the regular meeting. Thank you all for that part of the meeting, and we have the adoption of the agenda.
I see one thing that I did not see, do we have any kind of a resolution by chance about the historic courthouse?
We do not, because no, and honestly, Ms. Kilpatrick just literally called me as I was walking out the door today. So maybe we need to have a discussion about that with the board and
yeah, we need to, that will be under new business,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay, so under new business, we will put
historic
the
courthouse.
Historic, the resolution.
Yeah, historic courthouse resolution.
Okay. All right, then, county administrator's report.
Yeah, just honestly, good to have a few quick things to report this evening.
Did they make a motion on the agenda?
What's that?
Was there
a motion on the agenda? I don't.
So moved.
Yep.
Okay, so I need a second.
Second.
All right, it has been, my motion was made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Sheridan, to accept the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? If not, the chair votes aye. It's passed 5-0.
Yeah, so for county administrator's report, just a few items to add. We'd like to welcome a new employee, Jennifer Jenny Miner. She started December 8th for Parks and Rec. She's a facilities and programs assistant. And then also, talking about a little bit Parks and Rec, this past December 29th, 2022, in Parks and Rec, was the Whelan Sportsman Hunt at Pleasant Grove Park was held again. Four hunters had 50 degree days in clear weather, which was between last Thursday between 2 and 5:31 p.m. One deer was harvested during the event, and then if you look at the map on the left, the orange star marks where that deer was harvested. Special thanks to Fred Payne, Sheriff Hess, and the Sheriff's Department, along with volunteers Dan Palmatier and Emily Beasley Brown, who's a Fluana native, as well as Parks and Rec staff Eric Armentrot, Travis Lawson, and Aaron Spitzer, who all assisted in the event. And again, the below just shows where deers were harvested in 2021 versus 2022. And I'll leave it up to Mr. Payne since he was actually there.
Madam Chairman, I have a couple of comments. It's actually Ed Palmatier.
Oh, okay.
Not Dan. And what we harvested was a question of what your perspective is. There was only one that was killed and brought out, but actually two were shot, and the other one almost certainly died. But it frankly went into a place where we couldn't go; we just couldn't get in there. It was too thick, and it was. Question: using too much gun, little deer. But I say that because if you remember, the basic reason for doing this was to cut down the herd, so the sheriff could stop having his cars wrecked by deer all the time. So from that standpoint, we got two. Only one of which was taken home. But this, I will say, this has been absolutely the worst deer season that I've ever had. People, including myself, have gone out repeatedly and not seen anything. And that's, you know, you see them on the road and all this kind of stuff in your backyard and everything, but not when you hunt. And that's what happened here. And I just think it's a continuation of it. And the weather really didn't help. It was too warm. All things considered, I think it was pretty successful.
I think
they know what they're taking.
They're
like Monticello.
I
say, right, they're all
I guarantee. They have a perpetual salad buffet.
My property backs up to it.
Oh, you have.
So they don't quite go that low.
Yeah. I have about six of them waiting for me when I come home. They just stand there and wait. Oh, here she is.
I'll have six of them that I pass on the way back and forth.
Yeah.
As long as we pass them.
I want to be passing.
And then again, just some upcoming board meetings. So January 18th at 5 p.m. we have another nonprofit work session. January 18th at 7 p.m. we'll have a regular meeting. So far already we have four public hearings for I think they're all rezonings, I believe. Four rezonings on January 18th. And then on February 1, we'll have a 5 p.m. regular meeting. Then February 1st at 7 p.m., I will present my county administrator's FY24 budget proposal, and we'll go through revenues and expenditures. And Mr. Sheridan?
Madam Chair, I will let you know on February 1st I will not be here, and it's breaking my heart.
Yeah, you're not going to be here with the budget. You need to cancel whatever you're doing.
I'll let you call Christine Tucker.
Okay.
And then one thing, too, just we're going to arrange with this. Usually every budget year we do usually like two-by meetings for board members to come in and kind of get a sneak preview of the budget and ask questions and stuff like that. We usually do that the week prior. I think we have on the budget calendar January 23rd to 27th. So we'll be reaching out to the board members to see what days and times and everything works out for different members to be able to kind of come in and get a sneak preview and ask questions. But that's all I have to report, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Eric on his presentation? If not, then we will open our first public comments. And we'd like you to come to the podium here and give your name and address, and you have 5 minutes to speak to the board. Anyone would like to speak? Okay, I don't see anyone coming. For anyone online, Ms. Harris?
No, ma'am.
Okay, then we will close the first public comment. We don't have any public hearings, no action matters. Appointments, we have presentations. The first presentation is the Fluvanna Community Center renovation update.
Yep. So supervisors, I know Mrs. Booker has brought this up a couple times, and I know maybe one or two other board members have been to the community center. But again, wanted to give the board just an update of kind of what the condition of the community center, some costs that have been submitted in the fiscal year 24 budget for the CIP. And then just one, if there's any, any questions at the end, or if there's anything that the board feels we should move forward with sooner than later. So anyway, we'll just kind of go through and show you. So one, the board requested staff to bring forward a list of renovations for the community center, and the list of requested renovation items are in the fiscal year 24 capital improvement plan that already went through the planning commission, and so that'll be coming to the board as part of the budget. Like I said, I haven't determined which items are in the budget at this point, but it's a request. So one of the first items that Mr. Hickman put in for the community center. So just to kind of give you a heads up. So the total request for the community center was a total project cost of $650,000. So we'll kind of go through all the different items of that request. So the first part of that is patch and paint interior walls, doors, hard ceilings, exterior doors and windows. Some of it's a little hard to see. I mean, from the pictures, the walls look good, but if you get in there and kind of really get a close look, one, it's definitely in need of some paint and some renovations from just a general paint and kind of touch-up standpoint. I'm not sure when the building or the interior was painted, but it's been quite some time. And if you get really close to looking at this front door and looking at some of the green trim around and things like that, it's in need of some attention. Yep.
And can I ask, sure, when we get these estimates, where are they coming from?
Mr. Hickman?
I thought so.
Mr. Hickman brings them forth, just from experience, talking to vendors, vendors that we dealt with, from a carpet standpoint, what's the price per square foot, price per, I don't know what the basis is for painting, if it's per square foot or whatever, but those are kind of where some of the estimates come from. Then another item was to install carpet in the auditorium and entrance area. So if you see the floors and some of the pictures, you can see there's I'm not sure what type of coat this is over the existing floors, but a lot of areas in the floor, you can see some of the lines are coming up, and a lot of that coating is starting to chip away and come up. It's in need of some attention. So $30,000 is the plan for installing carpet. And when I say carpet, I'm not talking shag carpet. Something similar to what is in the library meeting room there. Something commercial grade, durable, low height and you know, in squares, carpet squares and stuff. So things can be replaced by square if anything needs to be, you know, repaired or anything like that. And so that's kind of the look of, you know, what would be intended for potentially the auditorium and then maybe some of the hallway areas as well. Any questions on that item?
I just don't know why we wouldn't go with shag carpet myself.
Disco ball.
Yeah.
Disco ball.
You think some green shag carpet in there?
Gold orange. Yeah, yeah. Stripes in it.
Yeah, there you go.
Is the carpet less than the flooring?
Mr. Hickman, could you come up? You might want to stay up here if questions come up on this one.
I'm a little worried about the carpet getting dirty.
Yeah. So, Mr. Hickman, the question was, is carpeting more, you'd say more expensive than other flooring options? Was that the question, Mrs. Eager?
Yes, it's because what's it compared to regular flooring?
We picked carpet for sound as well as comfort in there, and we have used this type of carpet in the library, in the safety building. And it's been a great product for us that we've used. You can put it down in 12-inch or 24-inch squares, so if something gets damaged, we can take it right back up and fix the area in a very small area versus the whole area. So that I just estimated with the carpet. So that's what I did.
I was trying to think, the library, like, it's the back door that I'm used to walking in. If it's initially carpet, or if there's some sort of vinyl or something, it is. And yeah, I was wondering the same thing here, just imagining how dirty that entrance, if it was carpet, the first step in, might be.
And again, looking at some flooring options for here, maybe right at the very beginning of the doorway, maybe right in that first area, maybe it's not carpet, maybe
you
it's
have
something
a mat
else.
Down.
Oh. Yeah, or you have a mat yeah. down or something like that, a big mat over the carpet or something like that. But the carpet, that low profile commercial grade carpet's held up very well, and there's lots of kids' activities going on at the library as well. So,
and I think that's one thing he's saying. If with the 12 and 24 inches, let's say those first two or three get bad.
Yeah, you replace it.
Pull them up, replace it.
And Miss Hoffman's online too, if you want to get any from the library.
She has commented and said that it's super easy to clean, used in many assisted living places. Back hallway is tile, and meeting room and main area carpet. We have mats just in the door on the tiles.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
So yeah, so that's kind of a look at what was, and again too, you know, some of it is there's a, you know, just a utility standpoint. Then there's also the sound deadening piece in there. Anytime you try to have any type of meeting or anything in there, it's near impossible. There's a couple factors that lead to that, but it's near impossible to hear in there. So that's one item. Second is potentially, and this one we would have to see really what the intended use is from that room, but potentially installing a sound system for the auditorium as well in there. So that's estimated at around 20,000. And then again, this is just a look at the stage from the back of the room, and then a look from on top of the stage looking towards the entrance into that into the auditorium area.
Now that stage is in some pretty good condition, that wood floor. Yeah, this very well kept.
Yeah, the stage
sure
itself, the wood floor.
A long time. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So is it still wood floor in there, or that coating is over?
I think it's wood.
Oh,
is it?
The stage?
Oh, the stage.
Yeah, the stage. Yeah, the stage is wood. Secondly, replace end-of-life spanned HVAC heat pumps at 90K. And Mr. Hickman, I'll let you speak about this. I mean, just before you do, just a couple things. You can see a couple pictures here showing the room. So again, here's the kind of the mechanical room, and the returns are right in the room, and you can see the big ductwork going on both sides of the room, and it's loud. And so, Mr. Hickman, you want to speak on the HVAC system?
Yeah, the way the system was designed, it's very noisy in there, and it's because the return and the is so close right there, and the equipment is right behind that wall. You can just hear it when it comes on and off. And there's nothing we can dampen that with the way it is built today. The system is coming near the end of its life. If we're going to do any modification, we we would replace the units.
But what would that do to dampen the noise, replacing the units?
We would move the, we'd either change the return or we'd move the equipment away from the return.
And how old is the equipment you have?
It's pretty old. I can't tell you the date right now.
We had a thing a couple of years ago, Mr. Fairchild, before you got on here. They came through and went through all of the air conditioning units. It was like half of them were going to need to be, throughout the county buildings, we're going to need to be replaced within the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, we had a number, and I don't recall. Actually, it was when the county hired the HVAC specialist position, the number of units that we had in county buildings, and it was pretty astronomical in kind of the age of them, and there a lot of them are pretty at end of life, and especially when we did the energy audit, some of those, you know, they kind of went through, looked at some of them, and so yeah, some of our units are getting close, and I don't know the specifics on this particular unit.
Whatever meeting it was, they had a list, and I mean it listed, installed this year, you know, how many years ago.
So we know when these were installed.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think we have a document that says the year of the units. Yeah, can the age of the units.
Can we find that out?
I can get that list for you.
Ms. Harris, if you, I don't know if you can look back on the meeting.
Oh, we can do it.
Okay, any other questions? You have some other things.
There's a couple more. Yeah, just a couple, just okay. Going through. So one, renovate bathrooms with new fixtures, stalls, and vanities. I only went in the men's room, took pictures there, so can't tell you what the ladies' room looks like. But again, some of it, you know, you've got hodgepodge of you know, old lavatory sinks, more home sinks, and, you know, some of it's not in horrible shape. It's just, again, some of it needs to be, I don't think it's had a major renovation of any sort in quite some time.
Actually, I can tell you when it was.
Oh, you can?
I knew she could find it. She's looking up things like that.
Would you say?
So there's lots of dates, but the earliest date is 2001. For the community center.
So the units were installed?
Yeah, there's 9 heat pumps. I've got 2 in 2001, 2 in 2002, 2 in 2004, and then 2011, 16, and 17.
So those are heat pumps. I'm assuming we know they weren't 11 or 16.
Wow.
Yeah, because I honestly, when I did the walk, some of the other pictures, I think some of the other units on the outside of the building, when I saw them, they looked a little newer as I was going around.
Some of the outside units are there.
What about the room in the far where the dog training room, where the pipes were not covered at all?
That's,
you all covered.
That's been done. That's been done. The drop ceiling's been put in there to fix that issue.
Okay.
Again, install concrete sidewalk to connect all the way around the building. You can just see. So there was work. I don't know whatever type of plumbing work that was done on the building some time ago. And you can see, like, for instance, in the picture to the right, things were cut out, sidewalks were cut out, never replaced. You can look back here, and it's kind of hard to see. There's sections of sidewalk that were cut out for any type of plumbing, and there's been no type of replacement. And you can just see some of the status, current shape of some of the existing sidewalks there. So there's need of some concrete work around the building as well.
Okay, when you look at the picture on the left, the bottom left,
yep,
and over toward the right, you can see the raised gardens,
yep,
that our senior citizens raise vegetables and things, and they have to come around the building, or those who can come down the steps in order to get into that area.
Yeah,
so it's real important we don't have things where we as senior citizens can trip and fall.
And a big shout out to Kim Mayo and her folks and Public Works, you know, that was kind of creating that whole fenced in garden area was a joint effort. And this picture doesn't do it justice, but they've done a lot of good work in there. But again, some of the area around it for those that are utilizing it, it's probably not the safest. And so, again, that was concrete work was $80,000, and then install new roof, which is the biggest ticket, the largest ticket item of the $650,000 for $250,000. And then there's also have a contractor engineer investigate and provide solution. There's a basement underneath the stage room that has some issues and leaks and stuff like that. So, Calvin, any information you want to provide on the roof and the age of the roof?
No, I can't give you the age of it, but These were, I did not get a contractor out there to estimate it. This was just our estimation that we did for it. And it's going to be in that ballpark.
Is it rubber membrane? Or?
I think it is, yes. That's correct.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope. And again, this is just kind of the recap of everything. And again, the total is $650. So some of these things, you know, the county could, you know, maybe some of the smaller items, if the board wanted us to move forward, we could move forward in some other means, whether it's coming out of fund balance, coming out of CRM, or we can just wait to do everything in as part of the FY24 CIP process. So, but again, this request is in for fiscal year 24 for the CIP. But I know there's been some questions about, you know, getting an idea of what's going on in that building. So this is kind of what's needed. And there's probably some little other smaller odds and ends that are not CIP worthy to add in here.
So I'd ask, and we've had the conversation throughout the year, 30,000 foot, what's our goal? So I look at some of this and go, boy, you got to take care of this because somebody could fall and get hurt and so on. Also look at the bathroom and say, all right, it's not cosmetically pleasing, but while very functional, meaning it is a mishmash of what seems to be a residential vanity and all. So it even brings up in my own mind, what is our goal and what we're doing here? And to me, that helps to determine where and what we spend money on.
Well, I think for one thing's for certain, the building's not necessarily going well. I don't think I've ever heard from the board that the board wants to have that building not be a part of our facilities in the future. Again, we got a new commercial kitchen that's in there. You know, I think cooperative extension. When they move there, I think they're a little hesitant about the move there just because they're leaving Palmyra and from more of the population center. But the nice thing about them being there is they've really been able to do a lot more with their ag programs there, the big garden and stuff like that, and there's some space for them to do that. So I don't see the building necessarily not being part of our facility. So if it's going to stay in that fashion, plus Parks and Rec has programs there, it's one of the senior centers, so if it's going to stay there, we need to do things to get it up to shape. If we're going to have meetings, you know, if we want to have any type of meetings there that are productive and easier to hear, you know, I just think some of this stuff is going to be needed.
And I agree with that. All of that. I'm glad we're there, and there's lots of things to be done. And again, I'll make the poster child of that doesn't fit into a real need. But there's also a need for aesthetics and make it something that any building that people want to go into and enjoy as a part of the county. So again, I'm just trying to figure out where we are regarding what we want to affect and what we don't.
Yeah, I think the way it looks says a lot about Luvanna County. It says Luvanna County community center. And as you look at other counties, that's the hub of that county. It represents what the county stands for. And I think if we can do the things, those things need to be done and make it more inviting, I think it'll be used more. A lot of things belong in that building, and maybe we need to have the extension agency come in and tell us all the things that they do. Like if they're going to do a lesson on some agricultural thing, they need in that auditorium to meet. We need to encourage people to use it more. It could make money for the county. But if it's going to be called Luvanna County Community Center, let's make it look like the way we want it to look, so that you know, we're not putting any big fancy things in. We're just trying to update it. I've gone to the women's bathroom, and I know that needs to be updated. You didn't.
I didn't go in there.
I'm not thinking about anything fancy. Just the way things are placed, where they are. The commodes, are they high? so that they're not down low there.
I laugh at Columbia Elementary.
I mean, we need to, we will use that building. I mean, it's being used now, and we should use it more.
So will this be coming to us as this entire 650 grand, or?
In the budget.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, so yes, I mean, it's a request, and again, from when I proposed my budget, I haven't determined what items are going to fit within the budget or not, so it's definitely a request, and whether I recommend it or not, the board certainly can change whatever my recommendations are. And then again, too, the board can either say that maybe there's some things that need to be done now, or it just waits for fiscal year 24, but we wanted to at least bring forward kind of what, you know, some of the things and some of the items that need to be addressed.
What's our current MRR balance?
Can you look in the board package at the capital reserve for the county, please?
I think it's 600,000.
I want to say it's 600,000 something.
600,000.
That seems you've got about $110,000 of, you know, sort of right off the top, things that can be done that improve the space.
The bottom line, 668, 473.
668. Yeah, so you got about 110,000 or so patching the windows, doors, installing the carpet, looking at ways to evaluate the noise options, and installing the sound system in the auditorium. Those things right there could then be done pretty quickly and free up this space, because we could then meet there instead of here, which I think is, would be valuable to the Arts Council. And I would suggest that we do that as part of the MRR, because it falls under MRR stuff. And then you could take the balance of that and put it in, or maybe split the balance of that into two CIP requests. I mean, the roof itself is a huge CIP request, and maybe doesn't need to be done right now, as if it's not leaking in any particular spot. And likewise for the HVAC system, maybe some of that can be cycled through. So that breaks that out and maybe spreads it over 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to have some of our meetings there, there may be a few other things we need to do. There needs to be some looking at the HVAC, maybe not. There definitely needs to be some attention to the return, or I'm sorry, the vents or the ductwork in that space. But I think there's some other things between carpeting, potentially some, I mean, like these, like the curtains over the windows and stuff like that can help deaden sound a little bit better. And so there are some things that could.
And the sound system itself is obviously.
There is no sound system.
But that's one install sound system for auditorium.
Right? Yeah.
So that in itself would lend itself. I mean, we're in these kinds of meetings, the public's not speaking among themselves there as long as they can hear. Then that's sufficient for us being able to conduct meetings there. Maybe it's not sufficient for an open space meeting for the HVAC. But.
Yeah, the one thing I would recommend if the board said we want to move our meetings to that space is I think we would want to get it where, however we get these tables in this configuration would not work on that stage. The stage is much narrower, so it would almost have to be a closer U, and maybe it goes, instead of being a long sweeping U, maybe it's a longer U that goes back a little deeper or something like that, but maybe something that can close up potentially that everything can stay set there all the time, so it's a dedicated space, but the whole auditorium space can still be utilized for other type of functions. So maybe let's kind of go back to the picture.
If we don't use this space and it only is used for plays, and that doesn't happen all year long.
What's that?
If we don't use this space, who would, other than the acting at certain times of year?
For right in this space?
Yes.
Oh, well, I think that'll kind of that'll tee up to the next to the next presentation.
Yeah, and they do have after school. They have after school.
Yeah. Rentals in there too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rentals. There's a lot of booze rentals in there and stuff like that. So we have a lot of rentals in there.
Yeah, but for here, I mean, yes, there would be other things that would happen if we weren't here. But again, looking at this, I mean, I would try and find a way if we could somehow have maybe where the curtains are, somehow have it like, I don't know if some type of accordion doors came over, and so the board setup was there permanently and situated there.
Yeah.
And then the auditorium space could always be utilized still. Yeah. But that's just my thoughts.
All right, any other discussion on this before we move on? We've had that 603. Go ahead.
Yeah.
We eventually plan to put a building at Pleasant Grove.
Correct.
So have we thought about what the uses of that would be? I don't want us to duplicate space when we don't need to.
Yeah, so at Pleasant Grove, it was never part of the plan for cooperative extension and the functions that are currently in that building necessarily to move there. Now, Parks and Rec may, because the thought was, this building would stay, there's going to be a new admin building and a new social services building, so this building would then kind of transfer over as part of Parks and Rec. And part is, you know, because we got the facilities here, the Hines facilities building, potentially part of facilities and maintenance and stuff like that. From that building, it was never really anticipated for cooperative extension or some of the functions to move out of that to the admin building.
But we intended to put our meetings at that building.
Yes, the meetings definitely would. And whatever we're talking about from setting up a board space, it wouldn't necessarily be screwed in the stage permanent type of thing, but it would be a permanent setup. It would be more of a always set up space.
Right, you don't have to break it down every day.
It's not a constant breakdown with the electronic equipment and everything.
Okay.
So that got into a question I had. So I'll say I think about this in the way of what needs to be done, whether the board is there or not, because we sure don't know if we're going to do that.
Right.
Yep.
And there's so much more to think about if we do start having board meetings there, that it's just almost a whole different conversation. Because, like, I think about seating. You know, what kind of seating are you going to do, and what's the cost related to that for people to sit out?
So the seating would be the Parks and Rec has chairs. They're actually comfortable chairs. You know, they're not hard metal fold-out chairs. They're comfortable kind of ergonomic plastic chairs that they would have to pull out. But I'm sure after sitting in them for many hours, they may not be.
And I think it seats 120.
It does, roughly around there.
And then nothing precludes us, because our standard meetings, maybe we have 40 people at most. But if we know that we're going to have a big event, we can always schedule it here as well, too.
You've done it. We went to Central years ago.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe the norm would be, if we are there, setting up, you know, we could set up chairs, set up a certain amount of chairs, and if it's, you know, if it's something that's a little bit more, we could put some more out. But, I mean, you know, in here we've got seating for, I don't know how many is in here.
A couple hundred.
I mean, I would think we would probably need no more than probably 40 chairs set up at any meeting if we're in that space.
Yeah. Okay, so we're ready, I think, to move away from this. Thank you, Eric.
Just one question. I mean, I know Mr. O'Brien said something. Is the board wanting staff to, because again, there's no formal motion here, but if the board wants something to come forward, we could bring something formal forward for specific items.
Or just waits
for fiscal year 24.
Threw that idea out. Maybe staff wants to think about it.
Yeah.
And say, yeah, we thought about it. If we did these things, it would cost this much money. I mean, I just kind of went down the list and breaking out into the two other CIPs, and maybe we do take an action and use the MRR funds. I mean, that's
right. Does anyone have any concerns about that? Should we go forward?
Should we?
Mm-hmm.
You know what the MRR funds are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't we go back?
I just want to get ready, because we're going to roll right into the meeting in a second.
Yeah, we'll go back and we'll take a look to see what are some things that would be needed sooner than later if we were to have more functionality or meetings happening there, and then we can go from there.
Because I'm just thinking with the kitchen and everything else, you had wedding reception, rehearsal dinners,
things
like
really
that. You know, we could offer that out as a place to go.
Yes. we could use it. All right, thank you all. Now we will go to the proposed memorandum of agreement with the Persimmon Tree Players for storage and rehearsal space.
So here I come to throw a monkey wrench in that whole conversation.
Yeah. Kelly, is the presentation in there?
It is, but it's
a very, very brief presentation. So in our discussion about space utilization as staff, we have none. We are so out of space for nearly anything that we think about doing. This is prequel to the discussion in a moment, but we're out of space. We just don't have it. So when we're talking about having a meeting here or a meeting there, we are really struggling to find that space. For county attorneys, for EMS folks, we're out of it. So as we've talked about, I have this deeply held belief that the governing body of the locality should have a really nice place to meet, and they shouldn't have to be the traveling roadshow. That's just a little bias that I have about not feeling like it should look like the governing body of the locality is doing its business in not a ramshackle type of thing. This is beautiful and it's been great, but we break this down after every meeting and we put it back up. So there is discussion about where we go and what we do and how we have this, you know, long-term temporary meeting space that we don't have to do all that. So enter in the next wrinkle in the discussion. The Persimmon Tree Players has approached the county and asked if they can have rehearsal space in the community center on the stage in the auditorium. In discussion with them, although I am hoping to get a proposed or draft memorandum agreement to the board at the next meeting. It's a little bit tight, but we're really hoping because they are hoping to begin rehearsals the last week of January with a performance the first week of April at the school board office, actually. They won't be having the performance there, but they want to do their rehearsals. We also, in looking at different MOAs and MOUs that we have with groups in the county, realize we need to have a comprehensive review of all of our MOUs and MOAs, and there is a storage shed at the community center that Persimmon Tree Players owns, and the county attorneys have told us we can't give away space that the county has for free. We don't currently have an agreement with them. They are a nonprofit, though they have not yet received their 501c3 status. They're working on it. They've checked their boxes. They've done their work. So that we've taken care of. But in this process of realizing that we didn't have any signed agreement with them, it seemed like the right time to sort of bring up all of this at one time. So I've spoken with a couple of the folks who are leaders in Persimmon Tree Players. They're desperate for a place to rehearse. Also, as the county attorneys have told me, we're not obligated to give anybody anything. But we're trying hard. So as part of this discussion about space utilization, before we went really any further with this, I need guidance. If it looks like the space at the community center is a likely space for the board to move into and have, you know, not have to set up and take down at every meeting, well, that kind of stops this discussion about rehearsal space. If that's something that's going to happen later, then we can move forward with that. So that's kind of where I am. This is really an up here overview of what's been requested, what might be available, and how we move forward with that. So there's the monkey wrench I just threw into the past discussion. This would be an agreement very similar to the agreement we have with the Arts Council here. And backing up just a little bit, if we're not in here, the Arts Council will fill this with programming probably any day of the week that they can get in here. Right now they're limited because of our involvement here, but they would fill this. I don't think this would be a standing empty except on weekends sort of space. They would manage to find some programming.
And again, if we didn't have our meetings in here, could the Persimmon Tree Players do what they need to do in this space? And that's...
Well, to me, I mean, this was one of the concerns that I raised early on, with this thing, and it was somewhat disappointing to hear that, the Persimmon Tree Players really didn't have a venue. In fact, my understanding is that they had to... They tried to remove some stuff, and that didn't go very well. But it seems to me that the memorandum of understanding between the Arts Council and the county specifically allowed for the usage and rental of the space by groups and the scheduling for that. And so I don't understand why we would need to make separate space for the Persimmon Tree Players when it should fall under the Arts Council and its scheduling. It does not seem to me like that makes sense.
Haven't they come before us before the two...
The two basically always operated without any real distinction between them as far as the use of the
When they worked together, I thought that they weren't willing to compromise with one another. Is that not true?
I don't know that there wasn't a willingness to compromise on one part side or another. I don't know the answer to that, but my understanding is that the Arts Council is here to support arts. Persimmon Tree Players would fall under arts, and this would be the most likely venue that they would want to use and be able to use for their theater productions, which are only, I think, all of a total of four or five productions per year. And granted, there's need for rehearsal space, but that's something that you can coordinate. I think most of that typically falls under what they call Tech Week, which is the week under which they're trying to get everything ready for the shows. So, but again, that should be something that you would think could be scheduled out.
To be clear, are you talking as if we've moved from here and then the arts and they would make use?
Prior to us being here,
both
the Arts Council and the Persimmon Tree Players used this space on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Right? Once we moved in here, and because of COVID, prior to COVID, but once we actually moved in here on a full-time basis, then the scheduling around plays and productions and so on became much more complicated for the Arts Council.
But understanding that they're now looking for a resolution today, I guess, right?
Well, soonish.
Soonish.
Yeah.
So, why don't we? I mean, since we don't know what we're going to do with the community center and what this board does and everything, I feel like maybe there's something I'm missing. Looks like they're just looking to be able to use it now. We can talk about what happens in the future.
I don't have any objection to that.
Yeah,
but, I think ultimately that reserving. If we decide that we want to move there, if
it doesn't push them out because they should be able to come here.
They should be able to come here. And if that's not, if that is not something that can happen, then to me it seems like we should revisit the memorandum of understanding with the Arts Council because that is something that shouldn't happen.
I would think if we weren't in here, I think it would provide more flexibility more arts programming to occur in here.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably the biggest things previously was some of the big stage setups, and from what I understand, the Persimmon Tree Players has really kind of pivoted on what they do. They don't have such big...
Well, they can't. They don't have it.
They
can't do that because they don't have a stage, right? Yeah. So they've been operating out of Cunningham Winery. And
sure. It just seems to me that there's so many different we need people to sit down, everybody who are the players need to sit down and talk. I don't know how many plays the Persimmon Players do, how much rehearsal. All of that need to be part of the discussion with the Art Council. I don't think we can come up with, all we can say is they should be able to use this space if we aren't in here.
Well, that's the point of the the rentals, right?
Right.
Here's the schedule, here's
sure.
rental, here's the
availability. And they should be able to work it out. Shouldn't be having to spend time milling around with it. These are grown people. They should be able to sit down and get this done and get the whatever we need to approve, MOUs, and we get it going.
And again, the MOA, and going back to the MOA, we kind of got two folds here. Let's just say anyone wanted to rent the stage at community center. Anyone can rent the stage. Mm-hmm. That's a rental. But if someone wants something for no charge, you get into a memorandum of agreement that you have to get into with the county, and because with that there's some guidelines for who has keys, who does what in the space. If it's more of a long-term thing, again, the storage shed on the county's property, there was probably some agreement
years ago.
Years and years ago, sure, go ahead and put the shed here, there's no problem with doing that, but again, it's not our shed, it's not our stuff in there. So if that's at minimum going to be there, we need to have some, if the board wants to allow that, we need to have some type of formal agreement to say, you have this here, these are the rights and responsibilities on both sides. But in addition to the stage space, again, if it's not at the community center and they're here, I would think that there shouldn't be a reason that they couldn't be in this space to do what they need. But again, that's a discussion with the Arts Council.
Can I butt in a little bit, because we are running 6:18, we have 7 o'clock people coming in, and we want to be able to be here. We need to, and we're in this agreement, you're charging them to use the stage.
We are not.
We are so not going if, to, you're not
if
charging
they,
them. Okay.
So this particular request is for 3 days of rehearsal space, either during the week or on a weekend day. And that's all that this agreement
so
is.
So you're going to bring an agreement, you said some are bringing it to us later?
At the next meeting.
The
so
next
there's no
meeting.
Action I'm
no
requesting
action
today.
Tonight.
Really was to give you the background
and
the summation of it, and then ask for direction.
Okay.
Do I move forward or
can
not?
Can we wait? Did we have enough information that we can wait until she brings it to us and we should have?
Yeah, I would just write it so that it's flexible enough that
we
you know,
read
if we decide to move there, then we can move there.
And we can move on it.
I've been very clear with them that
okay.
the board could decide that that is the meeting space, and that will, and they do understand.
We do
that.
Want them to have a space.
I think for now, the question to me is, what do we want to do with that space right now, and meaning within the immediate future?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how does this fit into all of the board stuff and all that
for
another conversation? Mm-hmm. One thing I would add to that is, so I think of it fairly simple, because Louisiana's already in the business of, in part, having spaces that are county-owned that organizations use. So I would wonder why we don't charge for that when we charge for use of ball fields. So boys baseball, girls softball, there's a fee per participant. So I don't know how we say we do that on one county property and not the other.
So let's just keep that as part of the discussion. Kelly, Mrs. Fairchild, Barbara. Anything else you want, Ms. Kelly, to look at? I think you're kind of, we're still kind of up, but I think we will be okay.
They can't come in now until we have a place to go. So if they want to use it for a, what did you say, end of March?
Yeah, it would be rehearsal space. Just rehearsal space, 2 to 3 times per week. The actual performance is going to take place someplace else. But it would be a rehearsal space 2 to 3 times a week through the end of March.
And it would be
the community
center. At the community center, not here.
Here.
The performance will be at the board meeting.
No, the performance would actually be at the school board office.
Yeah.
But the rehearsals, the request is for like 3 days a week to do the rehearsals at the community center.
Yes.
Because I'm not here, Kelly. So every so you guys break this down at every time the meeting ends.
The next
board meetings, planning commission meetings,
and then this space is currently being used every other night that we're not here on a regular basis.
It's being used for performances there are weekend performances scheduled, and there are daytime after school programming here. I don't have
with the exception
what
between the Tuesdays
and
Thursdays
Tuesday
and
Thursday,
that we have.
And after school being 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. I mean,
I'm not sure about the hours. I can look that up
three,
and let you know, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Empower players.
It's Empower Players.
Mm-hmm. And which is fine. I mean, but if they're here from 3 to 6, is there any reason why you can't have the next group come in after that point in time?
Are you asking Kelly, or are you?
I'm asking you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have room to. I want to be very diplomatic and mindful of the bombshells that I, you know, walked through last time we did this. Yes, I think we do have room to expand what's offered in this space. But to Mrs. Booker's much better spoken point. I think the grown-ups in the room need to sit down and figure out how to, not these grown-ups.
Not these grown-ups.
Not these grown-ups.
And I agree, and that's why I'm questioning you know, if the memorandum that we initially wrote is not allowing this to happen, then it seems
I would have to look back, and I think it doesn't. I think as it is currently written, it is specifically for the Arts Council to determine who they bring in as a performance. And I think we remove the rental aspect of that.
Yeah, and I think we've...
I don't think there was never a rental.
I think we've gone off into another
subject. I think so, too. And this really highlights that whole space issue thing, so we'll go back. But I want to be very clear. So I am going to bring something back to you in 2 weeks, requesting rehearsal space and the keeping that storage shed on the property. That's what I'll be coming back with. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. All right, now we have the consent agenda. Anyone, it's minutes of December 21st, 2022, accounts payable report on November 2022, assistant equipment and fleet maintenance technician position description. That was Jay. Anyone want to pull anything? If not, may I have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
Second, please.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mrs. Eager and second by Mrs. Fairchild that we accept the consent agenda. All in favor? Anyone opposed? If not, everybody said aye. Chair says aye, so it's passed. Unfinished business, anything? New business is a resolution that we want to send forward to try to get some funding for the historical courthouse.
Yeah, so that's so Mr. Sheridan reached out to me because he spoke to Miss Kathleen Kilpatrick about that there was potentially an opportunity. Mr. Sheridan, you want to talk about it since you had the conversation?
I spoke with her, and I also reached out to Delegate Lee Ware, and the suggestion was made that we come up with a resolution asking for it to go forward in the next session, and Delegate Ware informed me that if we do something of this nature, he needs it, I believe, by next Friday. So if we are able to come up with something in writing, then we might have to have a special meeting to just...
Can we approve it?
How would that work?
Email, Mr. Payne?
I didn't hear your exact question.
We approve the resolution without meeting?
We don't have a resolution.
We don't have.
So is I mean, you could do a sort of skeleton, but I'm not sure that's appropriate.
Okay.
Because the problem is the resolution is going to have to be what you want and what you don't want, and you know, specific reference to the project. So I think it'd be a little difficult to do that.
Could we have a resolution that goes forward that maybe we get some concurrence from the board, but it's ratified at the next meeting?
We can certainly do that.
Yeah.
Because we need to get it into their hands before.
No, I understand that. Right. The question. Yes, I think you could do that as long as everybody understands what your position is.
Okay, and so we'll make sure that everyone can see that resolution, you get feedback from them,
yeah,
and we ratify it later.
Because what I was going to do is, Miss Kilpatrick called me at, it was like 4:20 as I was leaving the office to come here today to get set up. So I've got a meeting scheduled with her at 9 a.m. tomorrow to talk through, and I'm assuming this is what she wanted to talk to because I was out the door. So
okay.
2 hours for feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everyone's understand and agreement with that?
Well,
we can't miss an opportunity.
And just so the board is aware, what would be requested is a resolution going before the General Assembly requesting funding for the historic courthouse.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, good. All right.
And why would they do that as compared to all the other projects that are out there?
They do it.
I'm not saying they shouldn't.
Yeah, that's pretty much a regular thing with the General Assembly. They don't do it all the time, but it's one of these that comes up frequently.
And why would they do it? Maybe because of the courthouse and looking at the historic structures report, the historical significance of it.
Very
historic. I think it's easily defensible because the building is clearly a very important historical building.
And it's in textbooks. Mill is in textbooks.
And the one thing I think really makes it stick out is that it's the first one, and Mr. Moss taught me one day at EW's, and he explained it to me. I have no idea how he figured all this out, but it's the first one Greece had just opened up, and it's the first one built in Greek architecture. And he said that's what makes it special. That's why everybody around the country talks about it. It was the first one built in a Greek style. Everything else had been Roman.
And I support it. I think that's
one of our big sales pitches. And I think that's why Mr. Dahl is going to sit down and meet with Ms. Kilpatrick, because one of those things where in her past she's been in charge of things down there. She sees the historic value.
Ms. Kilpatrick, if you're not aware, she was the former director of the Department of Historic Resources for the state previously. So she certainly has an inside track from a historical standpoint.
Oh, she's a real find.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for your questions and input, because it really clarifies it once we
And we're okay with doing it, calling around, saying, hey, or sending it out.
Yeah,
and
we're
what we're doing, and we can adopt it at the next one.
Okay. Thank you all for that discussion. Now we will have our second public comment time. Anyone who would like to speak to the board, would you please come forward to the podium, give your name and address, and speak directly to the board. Anyone? Okay, if not, I will close the second public comment. And now we have a closed meeting and dinner recess. Mr. Ryan?
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at it. Madam Chair. Madam. Distinguished.
People always, when they see my name, they think I'm a man, and it's in Mr. Moselle. Okay.
I move the Flag County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A19 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing prospective industry, prospective business update, litigation, Flint condemnation, public safety, structure of emergency services.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion for closed session for Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sherr. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Flat County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify the best of each member's knowledge. One, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended. And two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
May I have a second? Okay. We have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Speaker. All in favor?
Individual.
Yeah. Individual.
Mr.
Aye.
Mr.
Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Sheridan? Aye. And Chair says aye. So we are out of closed session. And now we are in our session with presentations from our nonprofit meeting. So we have Region 10 will not be here. Are they going to send us something?
Well, I mean, they've got their budget requests in there, and I don't recall, there was one of them just said, I think Region 10 just said, could not attend, and some others had some reasoning with the holidays that they couldn't, but.
I've got a quick question for those three.
Sure.
Are they asking for continuous funding, or is it going up?
I don't recall.
But especially the small ones. Region 10 is one of those things.
Right.
It may vary by how many people they work with.
Well, Ravana Conservancy. Yeah, I think they went.
Well, yeah, just real quick, to look at Region 10, so they requested 131,000.
And?
I don't see what last year is that because.
That's one that adjusts with cases and stuff of that nature.
Right.
Ravana Conservation, again, who is not going to be present, is 5,000. And then Sarah Sexual Assault Resource Agency is 2,000. And if we go back, is the actual document, you know, like the whole budget sheet, is it linked up anywhere?
You know, that's what I was thinking, Eric, when I was looking at these, and maybe if we knew what they, somebody said in their report, you funded us this amount and we went up 3%. Does that help any?
When you get your budget document, you're going to see the history of what they've been funded over the years.
We're just listing that item.
But reaching out, I would say though, it would help if we're going through this tonight for us to start developing an opinion. If I want to start developing an opinion, knowing where they were last year, certain effects.
Yeah, that's a good
question. Region 10 is the same as last year.
Region 10 is flat. Do you see, how about Rivanna Conservation?
Give me a minute. I bet I can. So FY23, nope, that's report. Rivanna Conservation. FY23 Rivanna Conservation was 5,000.
And so they're asking for the same flat. And then how about Sexual Assault Resource Agency?
I'm going to bet that's low.
Sarah. FY23,
1,500? Yep. So they went up 500. And then what's, and they went, they're asking 2,000, I think.
Okay,
is what it
so
is.
They went up
500.
500.
Yep.
Okay.
So those are the three that are not going to, that could not be here to attend for the presentations.
Okay.
And then, actually, Kelly, if you can, do you see what the next one is for the chamber? Because the chamber's
Nevada
up.
Nevada County Chamber.
Oh, chamber's not going to be here either.
Well, I don't know. They may be online.
Johnny or
John and Daryl.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm here.
Yes.
Daryl's here.
Yes. All right, Daryl, welcome. You have 5 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
For you to tell us about your budget request.
Okay. All right, I appreciate you guys, everyone being there tonight and listening to the request put before you. And I had written in our request before the benefit of what you guys have done for us previously. We are asking for 5,000, and the way I explained it, written, and I'm not gonna read everything that was in there, I wanna kind of look at what we're planning on doing this year, which may be a little bit different than what we've done in previous years. I'll explain why. The Pluvianna Guide is the main thing that we produce a year, each year, just to help inform the community about both residents and businesses. Kind of a nice introduction to the county. It allows them to look up public and private schools, history, events, history organizations, government services, utilities, churches, healthcare, community organizations, and so on. And we kind of look at it as a nice way for those especially moving into the community or businesses just starting to see the benefit of being part of the Pluvianna County and also what the chamber can do for them. So in the chamber office, what we're looking at kind of in the future is we would like that to be kind of a, as I put, a gateway to the county, to the community, and hopefully people could drop by there to, you know, pick up a guide and find out what we have to offer. The issue we're having, and what I've seen with previous years, is, well, for one, last year, the cost of paper doubled. So we ended up getting only 4,500, and we did add some pages to the guide, so I understand some costs are gonna come with that. But with prices doubling, and us spending 13,000 a year on the guide, it was time for us to really reevaluate the importance of the hard copy guide versus more of an online presence. Now, we'd still have copies of the online guide, but we wouldn't print up 5,000 of them or 7,000 we've done some in the previous years. And probably looking at more using funds to go more toward online access. We're looking to rebuild our website. For those of you that have noticed or seen the guide recently or were at the annual meeting, we did change our logo to make it very county-centric and include a lot of symbolism in it for our businesses and our community. And we're trying to get everyone to see that as a formulation of the county, Pluvianna, and the chamber all working together to build business in the community. So I think to do that, to touch more people and have more accessibility to the guide, and allowing us to make changes to it and so on throughout the years to put it online. We're looking to have our website actually be a go-to for anyone looking for services within the county. Any member of the chamber that could go to and find out, you know, looking for a carpenter, looking for a masseuse, looking for physical therapy, you know, anything, a retail, anything, that's the place they can go and find trusted businesses in the community with, you know, eventually get to the point we have reviews, we have, you know, testimonials from people, take you directly to the company's website. And we look at that as a benefit for new companies coming in that are going to be more digitized as they come in. You know, they're new to the area and that's how they've done business before. And it'd be a great asset, I think, for everyone. And the key is to not take the money and put into 7,000, you know, guides that we unfortunately have ended up with a few extra on hand. And that's, you know, being generous with saying a few, decent amount last year. And we're really keeping an eye on how that's going this year, really counting and keeping a good inventory of what guides are happening or are there. But so what we're looking to do is possibly expand that to that digital side and to just make the resources that we have for the community a little more accessible, more beneficial, and more forward thinking. So we would mainly use the funds for the small amount of printed guides, 1,000 to 1,500, have some on hand, and the rest would go into technology and looking to digitize everything and make our website where it needs to be, getting the logo changed, you know, correctly to do it. Right now we're in that weird transition of the new logo on the guide, old logo, which we'd had for a decade and treated us very well, but it's still on the website. We'd like to transition all that. And so that's what we're looking for with the county funding. And we just appreciate everything the county's there for us in the past and have been in the present also, and I'm sure in the future. So we appreciate all you do. But that's all I have tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Do you all have any questions?
Just Eric, what did we fund in last year?
Kelly, do you show?
Can we know that on each of the ones coming
up? It looked like 5,000 last year. I had it up in the
While she's looking for that, Mr. Gibson, in the past, I know I've suggested that you do the list of all the churches, which is very helpful, but they're all telephone numbers. Do you think you could include email? Most churches have emails now, but a lot of churches don't. You can't get a person on the phone because they're not in the church during the week. Do you think you could find emails for the churches? And will you have the resource guide, the help resource guide, that we have put in for the elderly people, or where you can get services?
I'm sorry, I was having a hard time hearing. Are you discussing like access to the paper guide for those that need?
Yes.
We're gonna make sure to have at least 1,500. We haven't really come down to isolate it to a number. We're going to kind of assess how things go this year to find out how many we give away of the physical guide, and then we're going to base the number on that. But probably no less than 1,500,
right,
and possibly up to 2,500.
Yeah.
That we will have available, and we can take to, and we'll actually hand deliver them if need be. And we're going to do some of that this year also.
But if you could include email for your church list. Email addresses for your churches. A lot of people communicate with the churches and they have telephone numbers but not emails. Is my voice not coming through? He can't hear me.
I'm having a really hard time.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So she was asking about email addresses being included per church, because some churches don't have staff that's there to take a call. But an email address would give them another form of communication, and of course most churches today have them.
Yeah, that's for sure. We put in whatever they submit to us for the guide, we will put in there, at least for members. So we will make sure to make a note to have emails included in the future on all references we have to, you know, organizations of the community.
Good.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thank you. My mic wasn't working very well.
Oh, no, that sounds wonderful.
Okay, thank you. And the other thing I was saying, there is you have a health resource guide in there as well, telling people where to go for different services here in the county, which has been very valuable.
Excellent.
And, so thank you for that. I enjoy that resource. I mean, I like to have them in my hand. I'm old.
Okay, well, and some people do, that's for sure. Well, that's why we want to offer both.
Right, thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Next we have Fluvanna County Arts Council, Ms. Sharon Harris, and she's on Zoom.
Hi, everybody, and thank you so much. I want to, on behalf of Fluvanna Arts Council, first off, I want to just thank everybody for your support in bringing the arts back to Carysbrook. I don't know if any of you have been able to see your programs, but we're just so excited to be back in the space, and we want to thank Ms. Harris and Mr. Dahl for the work that they do so that we can share the space. You'll see our next slide. There's some pictures of we've over the past year, some of the things we've done as our season has begun. And to your point, Mr. Fairchild, we're asking for the same amount this year as we have, I think it's been for the past several years.
Yeah, just for your reference, Mr. Fairchild, for this. So the funding's $10,000, the county matches $55,000, the Arts Council, and we get a grant for $45,000. Way back in the day, it was a $5,000 match. We got a grant from the state for the Arts Council. So we would give them 10, five of it would come from the state, then five of it comes from the county. The state foundation changed their funding formula a little bit, so they reduced theirs by 500, and some years ago the county kept it level, so the county picked up the 500 that the state cut, so the 10,000 is flat.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But as you all know, for the past 30 years, the Fluvanna Arts Council has served the community, first by establishing the Performing Arts Center, and then by raising funds through grants and donations to provide arts and cultural programs. We also maintain the tech and the stage. We were formed with a vision to establish a venue to bring regional performers to the community, to provide a wide array of arts and cultural activities, and to facilitate arts education. You'll see our mission on the next slide. And then the slide after that talks about that grant that you spoke of, Mr. Dahl. The Virginia Commission for the Arts Matching Grant has really been a natural fit for us, and I think our original folks founded and established that because that grant is designed to support arts enrichment in rural communities like ours. The next slide, I think, will tell you a little bit about that. So that we can enable our residents to experience a variety of arts programs without having to travel outside of the county. And so we're really happy that you all partner, thanks to Ms. Melton, who does the work to secure that grant for us. And the guidelines in that grant are very closely aligned to our mission, but they also guide how we're to use those funds. Because our mission from that grant is to bring performers to the community and to have a variety of different kinds of performances and to bring regional performers and groups that have never been here before. So in addition to this matching grant, we also raise funds through donations, through ticket sales, which is minimal because we've tried really hard to make our programs accessible. This year, as we return to the Performing Arts Center, we've set a $5 ticket price because we really want to get people back engaging in the arts again and getting life back to some sense of normalcy and celebrating together. As soon as the recent MOA was signed, we set to work, investing over $20,000 to upgrade the technical capacity for the Performing Arts Center. We purchased and installed the projection system. We digitized the sound system and cleaned up the space. So you'll see in the back, the walls are kind of nice and fresh and white. We tried to, I think the Performing Arts Center was sort of not used for a while, and we just sort of tried to freshen it up a bit. We also have raised funds to work with local filmmakers to do a cultural and storytelling through film about our local history. As we provide our community programs, we're guided by our mission, like I said, and the grant guidelines, and we look to partner with organizations who are aligned with our mission and who also seek to serve the community through education and cultural enrichment. If you look at the next slide, it tells you a little bit about what we do to use those funds, how we spend the funds. We plan and provide arts and cultural events and programs. We contract with regional performers and touring artists to sponsor shows. We provide technical direction, lighting, sound for events. We maintain the technical equipment. We provide internet and phone access and manage the box office and provide customer service. We prepare the venue before and after performances, and we maintain the stage, the curtain, the scrims, the seats, the dressing room, the awning, and the sign. We maintain the website and social media. We publish and distribute a newsletter. We also advocate for the arts and cultural enrichment, and we try really hard to promote Flaviana as a community invested in cultural enrichment and an excellent place to live, visit, and do business. Our season is underway. You'll see in the next slide. We're really excited, as I said, to be back. We brought the Virginia Folklife Program to the Performing Arts Center in September, and we brought Willow Branch, which is a group that's been a local favorite and an audience favorite. We had our first ever, we co-sponsored an event with the Flaviana Art Association, which was our first ever art exhibit, and we had local musicians perform, so we sort of had an afternoon event where people would come together and look at art and listen to music and just congregate as a community. We brought the Flaviana Community Singers back for their Christmas concert. We had a family presentation in December of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer with a local youth theater group. And then we have plans to highlight local bands in January. We're doing another one of our learning and listening tours with Horace Scruggs in February. And we're really excited. I don't know if any of you know of Steve Bassett. He's a Virginia legend performer who wrote he's a singer and songwriter who wrote our state songs, Sweet Virginia Breeze, and he's agreed to come and perform for us in March, so we're so excited about that. And then we're looking to highlight and try to shed light on mental health with an event in May. So as we've come back, the next slide I'll tell you some data that we've seen. We've had some really positive experiences and positive response from the community. Our ticket pre-sales have increased by 60%. And our average ticket sales have increased by 75%. We're really excited that 70% of our recent audiences have been first-time attendees. And 30% of our patrons are coming from outside of Flaviana, so we're hopeful that we can not only keep our entertainment dollars in Flaviana, but we'll draw some of those dollars to the community from outsiders. But we're also really heartened that 80% of our donors have also supported the Arts Council in the past, so we're maintaining a loyalty base. So our next slide just has some comments we've been really, as I said, grateful to the community for their support. Folks have taken time who have donated and sent us emails thanking us for coming back, for bringing the arts back, for giving the opportunity for community to come together and share the arts. People have been excited that we're now including visual arts. One of the things that we were really excited, well, I guess a silver lining to COVID was it gave us an opportunity as an arts organization to go back and look at our founding mission and look at some of the goals that our founders and the vision they had. And one of those was to make sure that we had a wide variety of arts and visual arts and film and education were part of it. So we really focused on bringing that mission to fruition. So these are some of the comments that we've had from community members. And you've probably, those of you heard me speak or met with me, hear me say all the time that we really kind of are a cheerleader for the arts. We really believe in the power of the arts to benefit individuals, students, local economies, and our community. We know that that the arts promote health and well-being. They support social connections and volunteerism. They encourage youth development and academic achievement, retain local entertainment dollars. And we love that promoting the Carysbrook Performing Arts Center as a cultural hub is really a great way to promote Flaviana as a community to our residents as well as to visitors, because we really believe that community arts programs form the heart of healthy and happy communities. Thank and then our you. Next slide.
Oh, Sharon.
I'm sorry.
I gave you a little bit more extra time because Eric spoke for your time.
Okay.
I think people don't know when they're on Zoom. Yeah. You got to find a way to let them know when the buzzer goes off.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
I think
you
one of us, if they're on Zoom.
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No,
somebody with a microphone might need to just.
Yeah,
somebody.
Yeah.
And that's your vibe or something.
So, and have it near the microphone.
Right.
Because.
So,
I don't have a microphone.
This is your last page, Sharon.
This is my last page. The next one just says thank you. These are our arts partners.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Great. Okay, but I said, well, I'll give a little more time to Eric.
Well, I do, Ms. Booker, I do want to say, well, the one thing I wanted to say is we wanted to kind of thank you because you've attended all of our events this season, yeah, and you have been an enthusiastic audience supporter.
Yeah.
And we're really excited that you're investing in the next generation because you brought your granddaughter to see a show. So
definitely. Thank you so much. Any questions for Ms. Harris? You showed us the programs that's coming up. Do you have a brochure like you used to have, which you have it circulated in the community?
So we took a moment to say, wait a minute, we're not sure about what COVID's going to do, so we didn't want to invest in printing a brochure, and we're contracting with our performers just a little bit ahead of time, not a whole year ahead of time, mm-hmm. so that if something comes up and things, we pray to God it doesn't happen, but things fall by the wayside and we're not able to provide those shows, we're just contracting a little bit in advance. So we didn't provide a brochure this year. We are seeing that folks getting our newsletter and looking at our website, and we take ads out in the Flagana Review to let people know at least 3 months in advance.
Okay. All right. That'll help. Great. Any questions? Anybody else have any questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Harris.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Have a good evening. Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development. Ms. Harris.
I'll know when the buzzer goes off. Thank you all for your time tonight. We greatly appreciate it. I'm Helen Cawthon, president of Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development. So we are 8 counties, including Fluvanna and City of Charlottesville. I've been around since 1995, and I think all of you, even Chris, are familiar with our organization. So we'll talk too much about that tonight. Do want to thank Eric Dahl again for being our treasurer secretary. He has actually noticed a couple of errors in our financials, and we got those fixed properly. So, unfortunately, he's a former finance director, which can be bad for my finance director. So, if I told him to get it right the first time, right? And also Jennifer Schmack, she's been a wonderful ED partner, so we appreciate that. Under our umbrella is also Go Virginia Region 9 and Virginia Career Works Piedmont Region, and I do also want to thank Supervisor O'Brien for his service on both of those groups. Next slide really is talking about our announcements last year. You may remember the previous year, we did help with Stuart Tool and that announcement, 22 jobs, $9.1 million. This past year, we don't have a Flavanna success to announce, but we think all of these projects do help all over the region. We have 3 main areas of focus. You're familiar with those. The next slide, I just want to highlight again our exciting new initiative. Please look at livingcentralva.org website. I did go through that with you a little bit when I was here in October. We do have a wonderful page for Fluvanna as well as on our centralvirginia.org website. So we've got Fluvanna in both places. Happy to make any changes to that as you all see the need for it. We have gotten started. We have 4 students, 1 from Germana, 3 from UVA, and we're hiring someone from PVCC to help with our TechLink initiative to basically talk to students about career opportunities in our region so that your employers who don't have the means and time and HR staffs to go to UVA and the community colleges on site, that we're figuring out how to build that network so we can keep more students who, when they graduate in our region. Going really, really well, but we also are looking for businesses to partner with. So as you know of companies that have tech jobs available, we're focused on target sectors, but we'll really work with many different companies, not just those in our target sectors. Next slide. Just to remind you, our partnership investors include some Fluvanna County companies, Vanderlyn Recycling, the Caton companies or MSC, and many banks, CVEC, Fiberlight, and a number of other folks that you all will be familiar with. We greatly thank you for your support. And last but not least, we do have a formula, 50 cents per capita, that remains the same for a number of years. And so our request this year is based on the Weldon Cooper numbers published last January, not this January, for $13,778. And I feel like I was just here, so I didn't want to ramble on, but I would be delighted to answer any questions if you have them.
And Mr. Fairchild, I don't know exactly what the request was last year, but it's not, it was 13,000, I think, and some change or something like that below the 778 last year.
Whatever the population.
What's that?
13,601.
601. I apologize. Yeah. I usually would have that, and I did not bring it with me.
And that's based upon per capita for where?
Your population, so the county population. Yes, absolutely.
That's how the jurisdictions, that's how their contribution is what it's based on.
You have about 27,556 people, I think. I might be a couple numbers off. And so we would base it on that number and do 50 cents per capita. And we do that throughout the region, so then the larger counties and cities pay more.
Okay.
Then we're also, just so you know, I showed the investors, I apologize for not making it clear, that we're funded all locally or all within Central Virginia. So we have about 60, 65 private sector companies, UVA, PVCC, or Germanna Community College, and then all of our localities, 9 total localities contribute to us.
Can I also ask, so if you were to try to think of what data you could give to, so if I had to say to the citizens, hey, they say, well, Chris, why do you vote to give money to them? What data could there be that I could share with people and say, well, here's what they've done that's helped Fluvanna specifically?
Right, so it really depends on project activity. So Stuart Tool is a good example. When that company, the company before them, which name I completely forgot. The one that was in the
Klockner building.
Klockner building. So, for example, when Klockner announced they were closing, what we did is we almost immediately started contacting other companies to say, Klockner's closing, where can these folks, who needs these people? This was before the last couple of years when lots of people need people. And we identified places where those employees could potentially look that would help fill gaps and also make sure those folks had jobs seamlessly. I would have to go back and look at how many employees were impacted. It's hard sometimes for us to say exactly what impact we have, but I think we are always looking for ways to be as much support as possible. The other thing we do, and I don't have the number today, but we track the number of requests that we have. So how many times has Jennifer called us or Eric contacted us and said, hey, do you have data on this? Could you pull it from your databases? So we subscribe to databases that all of our locality economic developers can use to help them support their project work. The way I think it's best to capture it is really talking to your local economic developer, hey, is this grouping helping you? How are they helping? Because a lot of what we do is what I would call back office support. You've got one person, and she expands her team and accesses some valuable data by partnering with us. And also getting good ideas from the other economic developers. They meet monthly, and I think that's been very helpful, especially during COVID. We were meeting almost weekly, and that was very helpful for folks to learn what other counties were doing and kind of build a collective response and learn from each other.
And I certainly feel like all that's true, but
It would be jobs and new capital investment, and I could pull that data for you over a 10-year period or something like that.
5-year would be
right. And so I could pull that and say how many. We would track it based on jobs and new capital investment announced, whether they're existing business expansions or new companies coming into the region, like a Silk City or a Stuart Tool. And so we would have that data. I did not bring that with me tonight.
It'd be good if you can just send.
Oh, sure. Be happy to.
Okay, any other questions?
I feel like I was not doing my job. I didn't say that guy in Culpeper was shifty to me.
He was shifty?
No, he's a little shifty. That economic development guy.
Oh.
Well, we love
know.
Jennifer, we, so we were glad to see her get a nice promotion over here. So.
Yes.
Okay. But we love Brian, too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Okay, our next one is Sarah Morton, and she's from Virginia Career Works, Piedmont region. And Sarah, she's online?
Yep, she is.
Okay. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you? Thank you so much, and Happy New Year to everybody. On behalf of Virginia Career Works, we are one of 14 workforce boards in the state. We set up underneath the Department of Labor. We provide services to career seekers and to businesses across the region. Specifically this year, as a result of a Go Virginia grant we received last year, we started to dispatch a person to Fluvanna County specifically to serve businesses and career seekers. And with that collaboration, we are now partnering with Jennifer Smack and having a person set in her office to serve businesses and career seekers. To date, last year, we served over 180 Fluvanna residents in Fluvanna, and to date, we are currently are at the 114 mark, so we will surpass that number for this year. Our calendar year goes from July 1 to June 30. We do ask for 20 cents per capita, and that's based off of the population for Fluvanna. This year, we are requesting $5,511. And this money supports, as you all know, we get funding from the federal government, which is the Workforce Innovation Opportunities Act, which has very strict eligibility requirements. It serves a very low impoverished community. However, the locality funds allows us to help bridge those gaps where WIOA, those federal dollars, will not allow us. So when people are seeking services, whether they need assistance with books or supportive services such as transportation, we try to use the locality money to help support those individuals with barriers to employment. So we also offer hiring events for our businesses. We also align businesses with our new Career Pathways Guide, which is a guide to help and a tool for businesses to recruit and retain employees or help skill them up. So we have developed several different tools, and this year we just received another Go Virginia grant to help high school students, specifically career and technical education students, to find internships across the region in specific areas, specifically in two traded sectors, or targeted sectors, which is light manufacturing and manufacturing. And so we've started that grant. We also have a partner with UVA to help four-year college students to help find those students internships across all sectors of their choice. We also serve on the Fluvanna County Career and Technical Education Advisory Council in support with Brenda Gilliam and also Christy White, which we support and come out and help them as they need to get their students placed in internships, work-based learning, or high-quality experiential learning opportunities and job shadowing. So we just appreciate you all continuing to support Virginia Career Works. We look forward to future collaboration with Fluvanna County, and I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Do you all, anyone have a question? I didn't realize you were out here with our career tech program. Did you, Mike?
No, ma'am. I thought you were getting ready to say correctional.
Oh, no, not the correction. I didn't realize that you were so hands-on with Brenda Gillum and the high school. That's good to know.
Yes, ma'am.
Is the amount per capita level funded?
Yes, it's per capita, 20 cents per capita.
Last year we were 54.40. This year they're requesting 55.11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they're quite small, whatever the population was.
All right.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fluvanna County Leadership Development Program, Charlie White.
And I'll tell you up front, I think they're, are you flat this year? Are you $1,000?
$10,000. Well, good evening. Thank you for this opportunity to give you an update on the Leadership Development Program.
Let me know when you want me to go next slide.
Okay, I'm ready. The purpose of FLDP hasn't changed in its 20-year life. We invite those who are curious about how the county works, as well as those who really want to get engaged and make a contribution. We cover county operation issues and challenges, like it says. Our whole intent is to encourage citizens to get more engaged for the purpose of improving life in the county. Next. And the community has backed us. As long as we've been around, you all on the board have sponsored us financially, supported us financially. The Cooperative Extension Service provides background checks for us, as well as liability insurance. And we never have a problem recruiting speakers from county agencies, the schools, volunteer organizations, business leaders. People are willing to turn out and speak to our class members. Next. The program from start to finish, top to bottom, is managed and operated by a group of FLDP graduates, the FLDP Steering Committee. There are about 30 of us active right now. And we share the tasks, all of the planning, all of the session coordination, All of the technology management, we have people on the steering committee who do that, and we're all volunteers. Next. This year, we're meeting weekly. We started in September. We'll finish with graduation in April. As I mentioned, our speakers come from all of the key organizations, volunteer, business, and government organizations in the county. We're meeting each week, usually in a different place that's relevant to whatever the topic of the evening is. Students have plenty of time to ask questions during session, and our speakers have always been generous with providing their contact information for follow-up if the students feel that need. Every class member is required to participate on a project team to produce something of value, of significance, of relevance, and hopefully impact for the county. Now, within the time frame of the course, it's usually not possible to produce a deliverable. It's usually a proposal, maybe, that another project team can pick up, or maybe a county agency can pick up. That was the case with the Flavanna Town Crier last year. These are last year's projects. And the Transportation Service Authority. We did have one deliverable, I guess you could call it. The team that was working on the art studio tour created and produced that tour last October 15th. The public was invited to drive to 10 artist studios in the county, and that excuse me, that event is going to become annual. It's already scheduled for 2023. Next, please. We expect about 20 of our class members to graduate this year. The demographics are pretty typical of pretty similar to every class, all the other classes. We had 31 register. Usually we have a 20% attrition. It's bigger this year. It's more like a third. We're down to about 21. No one reason we can point to. Work conflicts, health problems, family conflicts. Each one's been a little bit different. And it's been a little more intense, I think, having to drive to a different location every week rather than sit at home and do it on Zoom. So maybe there's been more demand than some of the students realized when they signed up. Next. A few success stories. We used to do paper registration only. We introduced online registration and payment, and this year for the first time everybody used it. We're back to face-to-face meetings rather than Zoom. That's a better experience for the students, we think. And we had to abandon the bus tour during COVID, but we resumed it again last September. Since the first class, we've had over 400 graduates. And we know that more than 250 have served in elected or appointed positions in government. They've also joined a lot of volunteer organizations, civic organizations, lots of contributions to the county. And I won't read this to you, of course, but one measure is on each of these boards or commissions listed, how many are FLDP graduates? And we think that's a success story. Next, Gary. You've given us $1,000 pretty consistently. I can't tell you how many years that's happened. We increased the enrollment fee to $75 this year from $50. We had increased costs from buying streaming hardware and paying for the cloud services, Zoom, Dropbox, other accounts that we use now that we're migrating online. Enrollment fees cover about two-thirds of our costs, and the board's contribution covers the remaining third. Next. So we're back again to request another $1,000 grant. The budget next year will be pretty much the same as it's been this year. I could read all this and summarize what I've gone over, but I'll stop here and ask if you have any questions. Thank you for your help in the past, and look forward to your contributions in the future.
All right. Do we have some questions for Mr. White? Any questions?
I have two. Yeah. Is FLDP a 501c3, you know?
We're not, no.
So
you're
okay.
We've talked about filing for it, but we have not at this point.
And I wonder, I mean, the amount to pay in for how many weeks? Is it 26 or something like that?
It's pretty close. It's 24, 27, thereabouts, yeah.
For that being an every week thing, $75 is almost non-existent. So I wonder, I mean, 110, and I'm not saying we shouldn't fund 1,000, but 110 would fully fund you without having to come to the county.
I think it would. That's right.
And, yeah, I just did the quick math at 30 people. Mm-hmm. That's roughly where it's at. And I wonder if people would be more, like, in my case, I missed a lot, and money wouldn't have made a difference. It was business. But people who aren't coming, if they're more vested financially into it, I wonder if you'd have a higher rate of people showing up. Because it's pretty, I mean, $75, it's easy to go, you know, I signed up for it, it seemed like a good idea. I'm not saying it is the case. I'm just saying it might be something to think about.
It's worth thinking about. I don't think $110 would be a barrier. Going from 50 to 75 did not reduce the number of registrants.
Yeah.
So that's a thought, yeah. But, you know, we do appreciate your support, and we like to be able to say that the board supports us. Without that $1,000, we'd have to find another way to say that, I guess.
I need to start off with $25 and then went to 50, and that's
that's right.
75. And you have two students sitting right here, Mr. Fairchild and Ms. Wanda behind you.
That's
Wanda
right.
Armstrong. Students in her presentation.
Class of 2022.
Right. I was in the first class. And I was in the first class 20 class years ago. You were in high school? Yes.
Am I the only one that hadn't done it?
Huh? You've driven the bus.
I've driven the bus.
And that's the best tool person.
I was waiting for you to say, yeah, we got to pay for the bus driver. Oh, heck, I'll do it again.
Yep.
I actually heard him say that 2022 is the best class ever.
Well, I have to tell you, they allowed me to drive the bus until they put Overton on there as a tour guide, and they could not subject their students any more to Overton than I did.
Well, we do our introduction of the class every year. Your picture is on the slide for the bus tour. So we can say that we've got participation from the whole board, didn't we?
The year we did the bus tour, the owners of Bremo Bluff were there, the family owners.
Yes.
They invited us into the house.
Yeah, I was on that really tour. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was great. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for your consideration.
Thank you. The good work. Wonderful. All right, now we have,
last but not least,
number 9, Savannah Louisa Housing Foundation, Ms. Kim Hyman.
Good evening, everyone. And by the way, class 17, 2020. Ours was cut a little short by the pandemic, but we still
graduated.
That's
right, you still had it during the year.
We went through all of the classes. We didn't get to present our projects. It was the only thing that fell short. But thank you all for having us. Good evening, everybody. Good to see you. Go ahead to the next one. First of all, I want to thank you guys. Without your letter of support for the SWAP grant that we got, the septic and well, we probably wouldn't have received that $300,000 grant. So we had a letter of support from Louisa and from Flavanna, and it's nice to just show that that gave us extra points and put us well over what we needed to secure those funds. So working side by side with you guys is very beneficial, I think, for our whole community. And of course, working on the housing construction project is going to be a great collaboration between us as well. So it's been, I'm not sure exactly how long, but it's been over 30 years that we've been working together. And we do have, we have 6 members on our board of, our own board of directors. So 6 members from Flavanna County, people who are highly engaged, so I just want to say thank you real quickly to them, including Ms. Booker. Go ahead. And I want to go back one. We now have 4 staff full-time, so we've always only had 2 or 3. So we work a lot of hours with very few people, but I'm very excited to introduce Wanda Armstrong for everybody who doesn't know Wanda already.
Class of 22.
Yay. We're welcoming her back to Blue Banna. She retired from a federal position up in Bethesda, Maryland, and she's back. So now we have two full-time Blue Banna residents working for the Blue Banna Louisa Housing Foundation. So it's really showing, you know, we're helping our neighbors. We're really serving our community. So I have Wanda's card in here for anybody who doesn't have it, and my card again that I'm going to give to all of you guys so you know who to reach out to directly. She's dedicated to Blue Banna County, which is making a huge difference in what we're able to do for the community. Go ahead, Darren. We still, just to run through our programs again very quickly, we still have the affordable rental properties, the handicapped access ramps. We have over 150 out in the community. We do about 100 essential home repairs a year, home construction and financial education for home buyers. We do not run the Housing Choice Voucher Program anymore. We got rid of that this year. So if there are any questions on it, I think it's gone. Ms. Booker was very familiar with it. It was a unanimous vote to get rid of that program. But if there are any questions on that, I'd be glad to answer that. We decided it was a program that was not serving the best interests of the community. It was keeping people locked in poverty rather than getting them out. Just to give you a quick overview, our broadest program was the essential home repairs. We did 27 roofs, 15 HVACs, 28 other water-related projects, 19 additional rehabs. We did $321,000 worth of repairs and obtained over $200,000 worth of grants. Go ahead to the next one, Eric. Just to give you guys an idea of how much we've been ramping up, when the year that I came on, we had done $180,000 worth of repairs. And this shows the past 2 years how much we've increased our productivity. The $400,000 is what we project to do this year. That's actually a little bit of a low sandbag number. I'm thinking it may be up to $450,000. We have a lot of repairs coming in, and we've been extremely active. So that gives you a good idea of how much more effective we've been in the community. You can go to the next one. And to show you how significant the grants are this year. You know, you throw out numbers, you don't really know what it means unless you relate it to what was done before. So back in fiscal year 20, we got $40,000. This past year, we did $200,000. Our staff walks people through every element of that application. So you hear $200,000, you don't realize those are individual applications for a roof, for an HVAC system, for a plumbing repair. And it involves getting environmental review, a historic review from Richmond, photos of the house, application filled out, signatures from the resident, proof of income, getting contractor quotes and working with them and coordinating with the homeowners. Approval process, we send it over to Tom Jefferson. Then we get we pay the contractors, and then we get reimbursement from Thomas Jefferson, and we set up a loan if they're getting a loan. So it's really a very cumbersome process, right, Wanda? And she has jumped in. She just started in June and has really mastered the whole process. It's quite tedious and demanding, but it takes a lot of hours. So just to give you guys an idea of what those types of grants involve, it's really significant that we're this far. I'm allowed to take other people's time.
Do y'all agree she can go? Yes. Is that okay? All right.
Well, what we're doing is pretty broad for the county, so I do want you guys to understand where we are. So what does that mean specifically for Blue Banna, breaking out Blue Banna from Louisa County? We got over $91,000 worth of grants and $25,000 worth of loans. The average age for Blue Banna County residents skewed a little bit higher at 75, but the average age of the people that we help for the home repairs is 72. 69% of those repairs are funded with grants. So that's very significant. It was maybe a quarter 2 years ago, maybe 25%. Go ahead to the next one. I just wanted to share with you Louisa's numbers so you guys had a relation. It was $133,000 for Blue Banna, $188,000. They have 11,000 more residents. So we're actually getting a little bit more of Blue Banna than Louisa per resident. And we got more grant funds per resident. If you remember, 2 years ago, we did $188,000 total for both counties, $180,000. So we're gonna probably eclipse that in each county this year. Go ahead. And this is, just to give you guys an idea, specific to Fluvanna, how much we have increased the past couple of years. So going from $47,000 in repairs 2 years ago, $126,000 the first year that I came in as director, and $133,000 last year. I do think that's, it's very helpful to have someone who lives here, who sees what's going on and serving the community. It's really nice to be able to help our local residents and our neighbors. Literally got six doors up from me, had a leaking roof that I didn't know about. So Wanda had a neighbor who also had a similar problem. So it's nice to really see the difference that you're making in the community for people who are struggling. And I do think it's going to be over 200,000 just in Fluvanna. We're at 106,000, I think, in Fluvanna already, and we're about halfway through our fiscal year. So we're, yeah. And we were waiting on grant funding to submit. You submitted seven?
Seven.
Yeah. So we've been waiting at just yesterday or today. Yeah, she submitted because we were waiting on some HPG funds to come through. So that number's going to jump up again. So the difference it's making in Fluvanna is appreciable. I'm not going to go through these. These are all the grants we're applying to. This includes the $300,000 grant. We're applying for grants wherever we can to help people decrease the cost of these repairs.
Go ahead.
And that takes a significant amount of time, too. There are 20 people on our grants waiting list. None of them are in Fluvanna. That's mostly thanks to Tom Payne, former board of supervisor, and he's been fantastic going around helping everybody can. He's actually helping people in Louisa now. So we really owe him a debt of gratitude. The average cost for these ramps is about $3,500 per location. And I did work up a quote for Mel Sheridan for the Kent Store voting district. So that may be something that comes up for you guys that we can pass on our discount to the county if we get a new ramp put in there. Go ahead. Yeah. We sold two houses last year to Fluvanna County residents, two this year. So this is giving us funds to be able to reinvest back into the county. We've started a new program on the path to home ownership to help with our renters become homeowners and hook them up with budgeting classes, with a mortgage broker who's taught first-time homebuyer class, and of course we're going to start construction on the 8-unit senior living center. Go ahead. I'm not going to go through this, but just so you guys know, I like transparency. $719,000 was our expenses. Normally, we have construction in there, too, so it kind of skewed it a little bit. We did not have a construction project that we outlaid funds for building a house, so you don't see that in this year's budget. And you go to the next one is income. So we got about $300,000, not surplus this year, but that's money that it's all already earmarked to go back into the community and utilize for this 8-unit senior residence. So we actually have funding that will help because we're going to need about $1 million total, all said, with the land and everything. So that will help us get some matching funding with us coming up with that kind of funding. Okay, I'm almost done. So I am asking for an increase. as far back as the data I have was when Louisa and Fluvanna Housing Foundations merged. Back in 2002, and you guys used to fund $19,800. I don't know what the reasons were for it to be decreased, but you guys did give us $20,000 this past year. We have been operating on a shoestring budget, and I do think this is very significant for this community. So $35,000, I feel like, is an adjustment. Go ahead to the next one. Just to give you guys an idea of what other counties around us are doing within our planning district, Louisa and Fluvanna are both much lower than the surrounding counties. So Nelson County has a population of about 15,000 and they provide 69,000. Albemarle has 113,000, but they provide 428,000 to AHIM. And Greene County even supplies more. They only have 21,000 and they provide 42,000. So that would be $2.04 for that particular county. We're about, you go to the next one, I think. If we went up to 35,000, it'd be $1.26 per resident. So I want you guys to have an idea of why we need these funds. So they're admin costs that we can't get grants for. So all these grants that we're spending time on and energy and using our staff time to get, we can't get coverage for the staff's time. We can't get coverage for our insurance alone is $25,000 a year. We have office supplies. We have internet. We have a website. We have electric, phones, of course. So we had a shortfall this past year of about $23,000. We don't have Virginia Housing Admin coming in anymore because we don't support the Housing Choice Voucher Program. So it's still, even if both counties are able to step up and provide us with what we're requesting, I will still have to come up with $68,000 in additional admin fees outside of our other normal avenues. So I don't want you guys to think that we're asking for anything in excess of what we need. You can go to the next one. I think we're really saving the county a lot of money. If the county had to provide these same services, it would take at least two people. Luvanna and Louisa combined their efforts to save on administrative costs and not be duplicating any efforts. So that's, yeah, this doesn't, $35,000 doesn't even cover one person with what we have. We also, the contribution for both the counties is significantly lower than surrounding counties. We don't have other avenues for admin costs. We're very accountable to the county. We come in here regularly, work with you guys. We use 100% of our grants, it goes straight to the recipients and our residents to be utilized. And that's really nice, I think, for people who do donate to us. They know that we're actually using all of that funding for the residents. Like everybody else, we've experienced increased costs, staff, materials, everything else. I've been a grant writer. We have volunteer grant writers, and we're expending a lot on grant writing. We provide 0% interest loans to residents that they can't get anywhere else. No bank's going to give them a loan. And it really serves our heavily aging population in this county. So we're directly serving the residents who live here. I think I'm almost done. Okay, Eric. We do pay $5,500 in real estate taxes each year. We are looking for options for us to get exemptions. Most of the seniors who are housed by us would qualify if they owned their homes, but they don't, obviously, since they're renting. You may go to the next one, please. We do have a new website that's up and running. We have new e-blasts coming out to share our stories, so that's another $1,200 we expend. We're implementing new loan software because we do hold about $2 million worth of loans that have been put on an Excel spreadsheet for 25 years. So we do have, it's really something we need to do to update our books. We do have a fundraiser schedule, so I wanted to make sure you all had invitations to that. You were aware of it. You just go to that. I think it's the next one. It's my last one. It's going to be February 10th from 6 to 10. So it's kind of a nice opportunity for everybody to get out. It's out on 250. I did put Wanda's new card here in an invitation to the fundraiser event. I think it's going to be increasing awareness to the organization as much as raising funds. So we're hoping to raise $10,000 with that. Increase awareness, you know, for people that everybody's invited who's interested. We'll have silent auction and honor our community partners as well there. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That place is right on the side of 250 in Haydensville.
Yeah, it's right where Goochland, Fluvanna, and Louisa all come together.
A little bit further east.
A little bit further,
it's about a mile east of west of Haydensville.
Okay. Yeah. But so she did donate her venue. So she's wonderful. Yeah, very, she's fantastic.
Very, very easy to work with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you done events there?
Been there for some weddings.
Okay. And it's so cute. It's a barn.
Yeah. She said if we ever need to get off base for a work site, and I forgot about that, to call.
Yeah, I think what happened. My wife used them for school. They used it for,
she said for schools, for public.
She wants to do more nonprofit.
She wants
work.
To help.
Yeah. Right.
And if we ever do another all-site thing, we'll probably give him a shot.
Yep. Yeah, she reached out to us. I thought she was lovely. Yeah, very generous.
Anybody have any questions for Ms. Ida?
What rent do you charge on average for your rentals?
So we charge according to what the person makes, which is about 30% of their income. They're typically on Social Security, so it is below market rate. So we do utilize the funds we get after we pay taxes and we maintain the units to help pay our staff. So that's a significant way we do cover admin costs. But it is well below market rates.
What is market rate?
Like a typical rental. If a typical rental in Fluvanna County, it was a one-bedroom rental, was $1,100, we don't charge the market rate of $1,100. Typically, a person might make $1,000 in Social Security and they're retired, so we'll charge them $300 so that they can afford to live. Sure.
Any other questions?
The two houses you said that you all sold, where did they come from? How did you end up with those houses?
So we built them. So all of the rental homes that we have built. There were four that we built in the Habitat community. Yes, Houchin's mm-hmm. Place. So we sold two of those this year. Those are the ones from September and October that we sold. We sold one of them last year. We have an older lady who's in the last one that we own, and she will stay there as long as she likes. She's not in a position to purchase it, but that will go to purchase for the next resident.
Thank you. So the people who qualify, when you qualify them for the 0% loan, like how do you qualify?
So their income is what qualifies them. If they are below 50% AMI, which most of our residents that come to us are generally 17%, 19%, 24%, they're very, very low income. So that's what I mean by qualify. If they really can't afford the repair in any other fashion, they can't go get a loan. They don't have the money for a $6,000 roof and it's leaking. The gentleman up the road from me had seven leaks. And, typically people are making $800 in Social Security, $1,200. People who are higher income, those we're serving, might get $1,900 or $1,800.
So do you all struggle to collect very often?
It's really amazing that we have an incredible repayment rate. People understand that the money that they repay came from somebody. It then gets loaned back out, and their repair came from somebody else repaying their loan, and they know that. I like to use the example of It's a Wonderful Life with the banker. But our money's tied up over here in somebody else's house. The people are very aware of that. Once in a while, we do get burned, of course.
Sure.
That's going to happen. But for as low of income as our residents are, we did change a couple years ago when I came on to create a down payment program. So they're more invested up front. They used to not do the paperwork until afterwards. So we get all of that together. If it's over $1,500, we do get a deed of trust on our home. So we do have the lien secured if it's over $1,500.
And last question, we've talked a lot about these homes that you're gonna build in Fluvanna. Did y'all ever, and maybe you can't discuss it publicly, but are you starting to come to a place to build those? Or?
We're trying to locate a property right now. We have a couple of leads, but we are open to other suggestions as they come up. Finding something that will handle the well and septic on one piece and will be rezoned properly is a bit of a challenge, which is not surprising.
Right.
Finding the right location. We have found a location for Louisa County, but we have not found one for Fluvanna. Yeah, so we are struggling with that. If you know of anybody, we figure we'll need about 5 acres.
Yeah, we do need to help them see if we can find that acre. Any other questions for Ms. Hyman?
Just want to get that together and talk about Columbia.
Yes. I did.
I don't want that to go away.
No, that does not need to go away. Kenny from CERCAP did reach out to me recently. So
I just will tell you, one gentleman comes out and goes fishing with me, I go down there on the bridge.
Okay.
And I said, if there opportunity ever came up for you to own your own home, and you should have seen him light up.
So okay. What are you talking about? Yeah. Columbia is one of the potential places for that housing?
We talked about doing CERCAP. It's another group.
We want to get the remaining people who are in the really bad area out of Columbia and build homes for
conditions.
Them. Yeah, the really poor living conditions. So those, it's a real challenge. and figure, you know, these are not easy problems we're trying to solve. They're very multi-layered, but Columbia is very high on our radar.
And you are able to pay for that property, I mean, pretty reasonable. Do you have a set aside amount that you could pay for these 5 acres?
Yes. So fortunately, with, you know, we weren't in the financial position 2 years ago that we are now. Mm-hmm. We are able to purchase a property outright if we locate the right one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
If somebody was to donate the property for at least, let's say they...
We are a 501c3. We can, they have a write-off for it.
Okay.
Or a portion of it.
That's what I'm going to ask you. So if they donated half of it or whatever.
Right. As I understand, you know, we'd have a lawyer look at it, but as I understand, they could take the market rate and be able to take a donation for the remaining portion.
Thank you.
That would be good. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank,
thank you.
Thank you.
I will leave
thank
these invitations for all of you.
Thank you.
All right. I leave think that ends us up.
Yes, that's the end. So now I see this word.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Oh, is that what it is?
I have been waiting to do that for a while.
All right.
Wow. Moselle's first board meeting, and look what happens. We're out here before 30.
Do we have a second? We can sit and wait for the second. I don't hear.
I'm out of here.
We have adjourned by Mr. Shorten, second by Ms. Eagle. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Or the chair votes aye. You all have a good day.